You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I want to ask you a question, and Tara, there is plastic sheeting in front of you there if you need it. Just to be aware, your chair is not marked splash zone, but the rest of those are. But anybody have any guesses? What would happen, what is going to happen, not would, but will happen when I drop this water balloon from here? Any questions? Any ideas? It'll break. All right. Let's see what happens. Here we go. Ready? It broke. All right. Well, good. That's good. Now this time with this water balloon, I'm going to wish really hard that it doesn't break, okay? Can you guys kind of help me too? Like just we'll just wish really hard this time. Like this time it's not going to break, okay? So you're wishing with me? This is really weird. I know if you're a guest here, hi, like I'm not that weird and fruity. But anyway, maybe I am, but not theologically, okay? So, all right, we're going to wish really hard this time, okay? We're going to wish that it's not going to break, okay? It's still broke. All right, let's see. Do I have any more in here? Oh, I do. Okay, all right, this time we're going to feel bad about it breaking, okay? So this time we're going to feel really bad, and maybe that will keep it from breaking and splattering water everywhere. Okay, so feeling bad about it. Oh, that actually worked. Well, crap, okay. But let's pretend. Okay, moving on. All right, how about this? Maybe this won't break. Maybe this won't break as we drop it. Now it probably won't. You know, the whole thing is ruined for the rest of the morning. All right, here we go. Let's see. This is an egg. And if I drop this egg. Ooh, oh. That was messy. All right, let's see. What else do I have in my bag of fun? Let's see here. What's that? I don't even know how that's... Okay. What is... Ew, that just broke. Okay. All right. How about a... I've got a kiwi here. What do you think? Is it going to be catastrophic or not? We'll see. You ready? Oh, it didn't do anything. All right. Well, there we go. You now know that from 20 feet, a kiwi will not break. All right. Let's see here. Man, I feel like... These were the givens. The harder ones are still to come. Okay, how about I've got a little ripe avocado here. See what happens. Oh, you can't see that, but that was bad. Oh, man. Okay. Actually, I should have said that out of the other two, too. Oh, that kiwi. All right. I have no idea what's going to happen with this. This is a pomegranate. Just decided to see what would happen if I drop it. I understand there's seeds everywhere, but it might bounce, so get ready to catch it. They're pretty solid on the outside, but let's see. Oh, you got to come back and look at this. I wish I had a camera here. That would be awesome, but, you know, I don't. Yeah, maybe I'll be down a little bit and I'll show you. Okay, so the pomegranate definitely went. Tomato? Plastic is right there. That pomegranate's going to stop everything. It's like dead on in the middle. Okay. It broke, but it didn't do much. That was disappointing. Let's see what else here. An eggplant. This one's kind of, it's a little soft. The lady at the store last night said, "Are you sure you want that?" And I said, "Oh, yes, I am." All right, here we go. I'm running out of space. That pomegranate is like, it's totally like blocking all of the... Here we go. Oh, it hit the pomegranate. All right, well, if the pomegranate wasn't there, that would have been a catastrophic mess. Oh, what are we doing? Oh, we're moving the pomegranate. Oh, thank you so much, my lovely assistant. Just in time. Huh? Oh, the TV will be fine. No, go ahead and cover it. Yeah, you can just cover the corner of it if you want. Go ahead, just a little bit. All the musicians are like totally like, ah, is that going to make it? All right, perfect. Perfect. Here we go. Now, you've got to... Now, are you wearing glasses? Because this could be eye debris issues here as well. Okay, here we go. Do you think it's going to break? I don't know. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like the summer where they're all soft and mushy. So we'll see what happens. Ready? It's exciting. Here we go. Oh! Yes, it does break. Wow. Wow, that was awesome. Okay, well, cool. So, obviously, except for a stupid eggplant that hit a pomegranate, and I don't know what's up with that water balloon, everything else, you know, when you drop it from a height of 20-ish feet, it's going to break. And it's going to splatter, and it splattered a little bit further than I had expected. Sorry, guitars. But right, like, at this height, no matter what you do, man, that watermelon's awesome. I got to do that again. This was a lot of fun, which is a point, too. But that watermelon went, it hit, it went everywhere. And no matter how much we wish that it doesn't, it still did. No matter how bad we feel about it, that watermelon being dropped from 20 feet creates a catastrophic mess. And I want to talk to you this morning about this idea of sin and how sin has consequences. No matter what we do, our life, our sin is like that. We have this idea that oh, we can play around with this. We can have fun doing something. And when it drops, expect that, oh, this time it's not going to break. This time it's not going to cause a mess on everybody and everything. But I want you to get, and the point this week, and we're going to talk about this as we look at Hosea, is that it's something, and I'm going to listen from me. Sin leads to damaged and broken relationships. So I'm going to come down and not die, and you're just going to stare at that screen in case I do fall down and die and not remember that moment. But I want to talk about how sin leads to damaged and broken relationships. And we're looking at Hosea. If you weren't here for the last couple weeks of this story, you kind of missed out because it's a four-part story as we consider the life of Hosea. Now, Hosea was a prophet, and we talked the first week of this series about how God told him to marry a woman that would become a prostitute. I wasn't happy about being covered. How God told Hosea to marry a woman who was going to be a prostitute. And they had kids, and everything was great. And then last week, we read and we heard, we learned about how Gomer, his wife, left him. She left him, she left the kids, and just totally turned their back on them to find her way into the bed of many, many men, and to the point where she became, she was a prostitute. And that was kind of what she did, despite the fact that it was rough. And so we talked the first week about how this whole story of Hosea and Gomer is like God and his relationship with Israel and God and his relationship with us. And the first week when we talk about the marriage idea is the idea of how, you know, when you get married, everything is great, everything is wonderful, everything is happy. And that idea translates to the fact that God is head over heels in love with us. And there's nothing we can do to make God love us more. There's nothing we can do to make God love us less. He loves us completely, totally, thoroughly. Then last week, as we looked at the Gomer's affair and how she left Hosea and the kids and all that, we looked last week about how our sin is just like that. Sin is like having an affair on God. It's not whitewashed, not something simple, not an oopsie. It's like having an affair. It's like finding your way into someone else's bed. And that's what sin looks like. And so I want to continue the totally depressing story and talk about how sin leads to damaged and broken relationships. Because I think a lot of times, like, yeah, it's having an affair on God, but we think, oh, my sin isn't going to hurt anybody. This time, it's not going to make a mess. And we have this kind of twisted idea that sin doesn't have consequences. And I want us to all understand and walk away this morning understanding that just like the mess that is that, except for the eggplant, I gotta fix that later. Maybe I'll come back to the eggplant. Just like that, our sin is the same way. Like, it might be fun doing it, but it breaks the way things were designed. I mean, that is not how God designed watermelons to be used, I don't think. That was pretty awesome. So maybe it was how God designed watermelons. We're eating it as like a secondary idea. But and actually, I don't eat watermelon, so in my mind, that is how they're designed to be used. But anyway, but it kind of broke the way it was designed, and in the process, sent junk everywhere, sent mess everywhere. And I want us to see that just like this relationship that Hosea and Gomer have, just like Israel's relationship with God, because it's the same story, it's a metaphor for the other, and just like God's relationship with us, all of these things, when it comes to sin, not only is it like having an affair on God, but it leads to consequences. Those consequences are damaged and broken relationships. Your sin hurts you, and your sin hurts others. And so that's what I want to talk about this morning with the story of Hosea. So if you have your Bible, you can go ahead and open the paper to Hosea chapter 2. If not, you can go to the YouVersion app and tap on Hosea. By the way, for the Thanksgiving experience that we're doing for our fifth Sunday, you will need to have the YouVersion app on your digital device. So if you have not downloaded YouVersion, it's a free app. It's basically every translation of the Bible in English and every other language for free. So if you have not downloaded YouVersion, and it's got all sorts of Bible study tools and all that. But anyway, you're going to need that for the Thanksgiving experience that we're going to be doing. So Hosea chapter 2. I'm going to read this in. Read this. For this reason, now I should start by saying that remember, the story of Hosea and Gomer parallels the story of God and Israel. So a lot of what we're talking about here, is that about Hosea and Gomer? Yep. Wait, or is it about God and Israel? Yep. So there's some things that are going to kind of cross over here, and I don't mean to confuse you, but just so you know. So, for this reason, I will fence her in with thorn bushes. I will block, I should say this too. The last week, we were on verse 6. So we finished up on verse 5 last week, talking about her adultery and how she left her husband, how she was having an affair and cheating on that. And so now this is God continuing and saying, because of that sin, because of that having an affair, because of that adultery, for this reason I will fence her in with thorn bushes. I will block her path with a wall to make her lose her way. When she runs after her lovers, she won't be able to catch them. She will search for them, but not find them. Then she will think, I might as well return to my husband, for I was better off with him than I am now. She doesn't realize it was I who gave her everything she has. The grain, the new wine, the olive oil. I even gave her silver and gold. But she gave all of my gifts to Baal. But now I will take back the ripened grain and new wine I generously provided each harvest season. I will take away the wool and linen clothing I gave her to cover her nakedness. I will strip her naked in public while all her lovers look on. No one will be able to rescue her from my hands. I will put an end to her annual festivals, her new moon celebrations and her Sabbath days, all her appointed festivals. I will destroy her grapevines and fig trees, things she claims her lovers gave her. I will let them grow into tangled thickets where only wild animals will eat the fruit. I will punish her for all those times when she burned incense to her images of Baal, when she put on her earrings and jewels and went out to look for her lovers, but forgot all about me, says the Lord. All right, you got it? Let's go home. That's kind of like, okay, what's going on here? Well, I want to break this down a little bit and look at this passage and kind of show you what's going on here with God, Israel, Hosea, Gomer. Both things are happening at the same time. And I want you to understand that Gomer's sin led to collateral damage. It led to a mess being made everywhere. It led to something that was made right being broken and then splattering on everybody else. And so that's what I want to look at, this collateral damage. So Gomer's affairs led to broken relationships. As we said, broken relationships are the issue. That's what sin leads to. It breaks our relationships with others. It breaks our relationship. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. The first thing about Gomer's affairs is that it led to a broken relationship with her husband. See, at this point, and we looked at this a little bit last week, and some of this runs together. It's all part of the same story. But last week, we looked at the fact that Gomer had betrayed her husband. She had betrayed her family. She turned her back on the one that had been providing for her, the one that had chosen her and said, you're the one that had loved her. And she totally turned her back on him. And so that broke her relationship with him. And so this is what verses 6 to 7, basically this is God talking about Hosea and Gomer and God talking about Israel and him. And he says, for this reason, because she left, I'm going to fence her in with thorn bushes. I will block her path with a wall to make her lose her way. When she runs after her lovers, she won't be able to catch them. She will search for them but not find them. And see, what's going on here is God is talking to Israel and saying, because you have had an affair on me, because you have left me for the sake of these idols, or Baal, and he says, you know what? That's fine. If you think that you want to find your want to find your security, your love somewhere else, I'm just going to stop it so you can't. I'm going to say, you know what? That's it. That's enough. And it says that in doing this, this is kind of, again, paralleling Hosea and Gomer, that then Gomer then says, wow, you know, I don't even have a connection with these other guys. Maybe I should just go back to Hosea. Maybe I should just go back to him. And so in here, there's these consequences to the sin that are kind of trying to draw Gomer back to her husband, back to the relationship that it's supposed to be. And that's what that word returns. She said, then she will think, I might as well return to my husband. This return idea is another word for turn around, or repent is a fancy church word that we use. It means to go the other way. And so in here, you've got this relationship that is separated between Gomer and Hosea, and this relationship that is separated between God and Israel. And the idea is that because of these consequences are there, existing, for the sake of drawing Gomer back to her relationship with Hosea. So she was separated from him. And it goes on and says, she doesn't realize, we talked about this last week, she doesn't realize it was I who gave her everything she has. The grain, the new wine, the olive oil. I even gave her silver and gold. And last week we talked about that, how Gomer denied everything that Hosea had given her. Oh no, you didn't do anything. It's from my lovers. That's where I find my security and my, and that was not the truth. Hosea was the one that provided. And so this is again, God/Hosea speaking here. He says, I gave her all these things, and she took it and gave it to someone else. In Hosea's life, or in Gomer's life, dude, I'm sorry about that. Gomer's the girl, Hosea's the guy. Okay? Hosea, Gomer, unfortunate names all around. But what are you going to do? But anyway, so Gomer had all these things provided from her husband, but instead she gave them to someone else. All the things that were, all the gifts went to someone else, and all of her love, all of her affection, metaphorically speaking there, you know, went to someone else. And so this relationship is broken. The relationship is messed up because she's gone. She's turned her back on her husband. She's trying to find love somewhere else, and she doesn't. Then Gomer's affair, the second thing, is it led to a broken relationship with others. With others. And so here's where the story, and I got to tell you this story. I probably should have said this in the beginning. You know, what I'm sharing about Homer. Don't! Homer. Anyway, what I'm sharing about Hosea and Gomer is in this part of the story, it's actually not written what happened. It's not specifically said, and then this happened next. But we assume it based on what's happening in chapter 3, and I'll come to that in a second. But I want you to understand that's part of what's going on here, is that if you're looking there, where does it say this happened? It didn't say it happened to Hosea and Gomer, but it says in chapter 3, and this will all make sense in a second, okay? Just stay with me. So it also led to a broken relationship with others. And basically, it goes on and says, but now I will take back the ripened grain and the new wine I generously provided each harvest season. I will take away the wool and linen clothing I gave her to cover her nakedness. I will strip her naked in public while all her lovers look on. And so here again, God talking to Israel based on the relationship with Hosea and Gomer, and him saying, look, that's fine. If I'm not the one that's providing, you think I'm not the one that's provided for you? Well, then I'll take everything away and we'll find out who the one is providing. Who's really providing? If you think it's coming from all these other sources, all these other people, look what happens when I really take those things away. And that's what he's saying there. He says, I will take away the wool and linen clothing I gave to cover her nakedness. I will strip her naked in public while all her lovers look on. And this is such a cool little Hebrew phrase. Because basically it's God saying, oh, so you want to be naked? You like being a prostitute? You like flaunting your body? You like stripping your clothes off for people? Oh, well, I'll strip your clothes off. I will make you naked. I will make it so you have nothing to wear. I will take away all the stuff that you have that you use to clothe yourself. And so that's kind of what's going on there. It's like a, you know, you don't, what do we say to our kids? I'll give you a reason to cry. Remember that phrase? You ever hear that growing up? Oh, you think you're crying now? I'll give you a reason to cry. It's kind of God saying the same thing. Like, you know, oh, you think you're naked? I'll show you what naked is really all about. And he says, I'm going to take away everything. And at the end there, it says, no one will be able to rescue her from my hands. If you have other translations, sometimes say, no one will be able to take her from my hands. And it's the idea that things are going to be so bad that no one else is going to be able to come in. And so we see here, she's losing everything. Her lovers that were supposedly close to her see her losing everything. And they're looking on, they're hurt as well in the process. It goes on to say that I will put an end to her annual festivals, her new moon celebrations and her Sabbath days, all her appointed festivals. She says, all the party's over now. You're having fun, and because of what you were doing, because of the consequences of your sin, I'm not only taking away the party from you, but everybody else around you is going to suffer as well through this. Because I will destroy her grapevines and fig trees, things she claims her lovers gave her. And this idea was that this is the payment for the prostitution. It wasn't money, apparently. It was plants. Here, you know, have a plant, and let's go back to the back room. You know, Hosea shake, or Gomer shake. And so these were gifts. These were not gifts. I shouldn't say that. They were payment. That was payment for sex. And God says, look, you know what? These things that were given to you as gifts, I'm going to make it so that they're just mangled and falling apart. And they're growing up. I will destroy the grapevines and the figs. They'll grow into tangled thickets. And only wild animals will eat the fruit. The party's over. Then he goes on and says, I will punish her for all those times when she burned incense to her images of Baal or Baal. When she put on her earrings and jewels and went out to look for her lovers. He says, look, all this time when you think, and again, God talking to Israel, Hosea, and Gomer, when you went to find your significance somewhere else in these other people, because of your sin, because of leaving the one that loved you first, because of this affair, it's not only going to hurt you, but it's going to hurt everyone else around you. Because of the choices you made, the people that you were going to for your source, your sustenance, your pleasure, whatever, they're going to suffer as well because Israel / Gomer forgot all about her husband. So here's what happens in the story. And again, this is what we infer from chapter 3, is that things got so bad for Gomer. She was so involved in this, in sleeping around and all these affairs that she was having with all these different men. In her prostitution, she had some other issues going on where she became indebted. She became so indebted that life, you know, she followed this path of sin, this path of turning her back on her husband and going in another direction, and it spiraled down, down, down so much to the point where she had to sell herself as a sex slave to repay the debt. So she had some sort of pimp, some sort of guy running her program, and all the money that she got went to him. All the money she got for sex went to him to cover the debt that she owed. And so that's where the story, that's what's happening here in this part of the story, is that she loses everything. She's like, oh, I'm fine. I don't need you, Hosea. I don't need you, kids. I'm good on my own. And she went down this other path, and she's thinking, oh, it's fun. I'm having a good time. But eventually that sin, it started to spiral out of control to the point where we find the story where Hosea has sold herself as a sex slave. She's not just earning her money for herself. She's doing this for somebody else because she is that far in debt, that much in trouble. So she's got nothing left. And that's kind of what God's saying here about Hosea, Gomer relationship, God and Israel. Like, I'm taking everything from you because of these consequences, because of your sin. You've lost your relationship with your husband, and now you're losing your relationship with others, and you're just a sex slave. There's nothing left for you. She loses everything in the story, and it's really depressing. But I guess that's the same situation with sin. Like, we think we can, she's up there saying, yeah, this will be fun. There's not going to be any problems with this. I'll just leave my husband. And before she knows it, there's a mess everywhere. Not only did it hurt her, but it affected the relationships around her as well. So that's the story of Hosea and Gomer, that she had gotten so far into her sin that she's now a sex slave. She's got nothing. She owns nothing. She's probably not happy, I would be willing to bet. She's hit the bottom. And all that came because of her sin. So the collateral damage here a broken relationship with her husband, a broken relationship with others, because sin leads to damaged and broken relationships. Sin never turns out okay. It doesn't. It always leads to a mess. That didn't break. That was just other. Man, that splattered really far. But it always leads to a mess. And we keep thinking, no, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So that was Hosea and Gomer. And again, Hosea and Gomer are a story of God and Israel. So God and their relationship, there was collateral damage. You all know what collateral damage is, right? It's when something, you know, the main issue leads to other damage around. And so it led to Israel, their idolatry, and that was the same thing. God was calling Gomer's affair, Gomer's prostitution, Gomer's adultery, leaving her husband. God was equating it to Israel's idolatry, to them turning their back on God, and like we talked about last week, talking to a stick of wood and expecting it to answer them, saying, God, I don't want anything to do with you. I'm putting all of my hope in this. And I didn't talk about this last week, but if you remember the story of Exodus, we probably, you know, if you haven't seen the Ten Commandments, I don't think the Prince of Egypt didn't cover it. But the idea of the golden calf, right? And that was this point where Moses is on the top of Mount Sinai talking to God, glory of God, making his face all shiny. And down at the bottom of the mountain, the Israelites are like, where's Moses been? Where is he? I'm missing him. He's gone. And finally Aaron says, look, everybody, I don't know where Moses is. And I know there's this massive cloud and we feel this thunder and lightning. But you know what? Let's forget about God and let's put all of our gold together and let's make a calf. Again, these people just crossed the Red Sea. They saw God perform the miraculous 10 plagues. And they're like, you know what? Let's get all this stuff. And they made an idol, a golden calf. And what Aaron said was this telling moment in Exodus 32. He says, look, this calf, this is your God that rescued you. Just in that moment, they're like, you know what? Forget the real God. Let's have an affair on him and start worshiping this calf that we just made ourselves out of our gold and our jewelry. But that's what was going on. And so Israel, like, they were stuck in this cycle over and over and over of turning their back on God and turning to idols. And so Israel's idolatry led to broken relationships. The first thing, just like Gomer's relationship was broken with her husband, Israel's relationship was broken with God. And later in chapter 9, and again, I said last week, we're just kind of covering the first three chapters of Hosea, which is the story of Hosea and Gomer. But the rest of the book is all about God's relationship with Israel. And it's telling, kind of using the story of Hosea and Gomer as illustrations to tell parts of that. And so in chapter 9, we see what happened here in God's broken relationship. In chapter 9, verse 4 to 5, now God, it says, there you will make no offerings of wine to the Lord. They're going somewhere, and we'll talk about this in a second. But there's going to be a spot where they're not even going to be able to offer anything to God. And then he goes on and says, you know what, it doesn't matter because none of your sacrifices are going to please him. There's a point where God says, you know what, your idolatry, your sin, your affair with these things and turning your back on me is so much that I don't even want your worship anymore. Just shut up. Because I'm not going to take your offerings, I'm not going to take your worship, because you've turned your back on me. Why would you even pretend to worship me? He says, they will be unclean like food touched by a person in mourning, which is just related to a Jewish, like if someone was around a dead person and they touched food, that food was considered unclean, which was a very much of a no-no. You did not eat that. And God says, you know what? All of your, even your best stuff is going to be like that. It's not going to matter. He says, everyone who presents those sacrifices are going to be defiled. He says, they might eat this food for themselves, but they may not offer to the Lord. What then will you do on the festival days? How you observe the Lord's festivals? God's saying, look, you keep doing these things. You keep having, you know what, God, maybe we will come back to you for a little bit. And God says, I'm not listening anymore. You've broken your relationship with me. You don't care about me. You want to go through the motions. God says, you want to just show up on Sunday, but don't care about how you live the rest of the week. Don't show up on Sunday. Stop faking it. You broke your relationship with me. Don't pretend. And so that's kind of the idea here. He's saying, look, your relationship with me is broken. He says, it's done. I'm not even listening to you. You're singing songs. I'm not listening. You're offering sacrifices, which is how the Israelites worship. He says, they don't mean anything to me. I'm done. Because you have turned your back on me. Why should I accept what you have? Then it goes on to a broken relationship, not with just with God, but also a broken relationship with others. And here's where it gets ugly. Realizing that what I'm about to say here, the very first week we said there's nothing you can do to make God love you more, and there's nothing you can do to make God love you less. And we talked about how God, Hosea's children were named Not Loved or No Pity or No Compassion and Not My Child. They had these different names for their kids. And I want you to understand that God did not stop loving anybody in this situation. As a matter of fact, God kept loving them because he wanted to draw them back to him. And he is the best thing for us. And so love says, let's turn you around and bring you back to me. So understand here that this broken relationship doesn't mean that God didn't love them anymore. He just said, stop faking it. I love you so much, but stop faking it. And he says, it's also causing broken relationships with others. And in Hosea chapter 9, verse 2, he's talking about how they had turned their back on him. He says, so now your harvest will be too small to feed you. He says, I'm going to punish you. You're going to be punished. There's going to be consequences for your sin. There will be no grapes for making new wine. And you may no longer stay here in the Lord's land. They were in what was called the Promised Land, the land of Israel, the land that God promised to Abraham. We talked about that the very first week of the series. He says, instead, you will return to Egypt, and in Assyria you will eat food that is ceremonially unclean. Here's what God is saying. He said, Israel, you have turned your back on me. And you continuously turn your back on me. And I'm here saying, I love you. I want you to come back, and you refuse. So now there's going to be some more consequences. He says, I'm going to take you out of the land, the promised land, the land that the whole book of Exodus is about them. The book of Joshua is about them finally getting to the land that God had promised them. And God said, I'm taking that away. He says, you are going to be scattered by Assyria. And that's what happened. Assyria came in and invaded and scattered the entire. Now, there were two kingdoms. There's the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. And the northern kingdom of Israel was scattered. The Assyrians came in, and the way they conquered people is that in order to keep them from revolting, from rising up against them, is they would take a nation and then scatter them among all of their other cities, along with other nations that were attacked and conquered that were scattered, so that there was no majority there. Does that make sense? So that every city had like, you know, there wasn't like, yes, we're 90% Jewish, let's stand up against the authorities, fight the power. But instead, it was like, there's like 8% Jewish people here and 7% Egyptian and 12% Babylonian and Persian and Baklavonian and Russian or what, I don't know. But the point was there wasn't a majority there, so they couldn't rise up. And that's how they did it. And so Israel, God said, look, I'm scattering you. You are going to have to suffer the consequences of your sin. and it caused all sorts of problems because their relationships with their neighboring countries got ugly to the point where Assyria finally came in and said, you're done. And that was the end of the northern kingdom. And then a little bit later, God actually, the Babylon came in and exiled the southern kingdom. But right here he's talking about the northern kingdom and how they were scattered. And so the point is this. They were turning their back on God, and it led to broken relationships. It led to a broken relationship with God where he says, I'm done. I don't want your sacrifices. I don't want to hear your songs. I don't want you to party anymore. Don't bring me your festivals all celebrating God. Because I'm done with that. And you know what? And now, you know what? Your relationships with the other people around you, the relationships, even the people in Israel that were doing the right thing, they're going to be scattered. Everyone is going to suffer because of what you've done. Everyone around you is going to suffer. And so the relationship that you have had with these other people around you, these other nations, it's going to be broken. It's going to be messed up. It's collateral damage. Because the Israelites were thinking, you know, we can still worship these other idols and turn our back on God and expect nothing to happen. But the reality is, there's a mess everywhere. And there are consequences because of their sin. So, sin leads to broken, to damaged and broken relationships. And I again, broken, damage, collateral damage. That's the idea here. That's the issue with Gomer and Hosea. It's not pretty. It's not going to be clean. It's not going to be a little thing and you're going to get away with it. Sin is messy. Sin is ugly. Sin has catastrophic consequences. And I want you to see that. I mean, we are, well, let's look at us. Let's look at our collateral damage. As human beings, we looked the very first week about how God created Adam and Eve and how their relationship was blessed and be fruitful and multiply and everything was great. They were in perfect relationship with God in the Garden of Eden. And then last week we looked at how they turned their back on God and that created a separation between them, that there was an issue where they decided to follow the serpent instead of following what God commanded them, and how that was, you know, they turned their back. They had an affair on God. Who told you this? God said, oh, is that other, that thing you created? We'd rather listen to that than listen to you. So this picks up on the rest of the story there in, as it leads to broken relationships with God. So our sin, Adam and Eve's sin, leads to a broken relationship with God. And this is continuing that story in chapter 3 of Genesis, verse 22. It says, "And the Lord God said, look, the human beings have become like us, knowing both good and evil. What if they reach out and take fruit from the tree of life and eat it? Then they will live forever. So the Lord banished them from the Garden of Eden. And he sent Adam out to cultivate the ground from which he had made. After sending them out, the Lord God stationed mighty cherubim to the east of the Garden of Eden, and he placed a flaming sword that flashed back and forth to guard the way to the tree of life." So here's the deal. Adam and Eve, God, perfect relationship. There was no sin. They were happy. It says that, you know, we looked at last week how God would walk in the garden in the cool of the day and they would spend time together. And now God says, look, your sin has cost you your relationship with me. We cannot be together. And that's not because God is mean. It's because God is perfectly holy and cannot be in the presence of sin. Anything that is unholy, that is tainted just a little bit with sin, will die in the presence of a perfect holy God. So it was almost for the protection of humanity. So they were kicked out of the garden. And there were consequences. Their relationship with God was broken. And our relationship today is broken. All because of that. Because of that relationship that was broken there. So the relationship to God was broken because of sin. Our sin today, as a descendant of Adam, we sin. We are born sinners, but we also choose to sin. And that sin is enough to damage our relationship. We cannot be in the presence of God. Everything was good until that moment. But we also see that sin leads to relationships, or sin leads to broken relationships with others too. And so that was the punishment there that God kind of said, okay, you're out of my presence. You can't be in the garden anymore. You have to be gone. Go out into the land. I'm going to put a sword there so you can't come back. But then just before that, there was the consequences, the punishment that was placed on Adam and Eve, on the man and the woman. And in chapter 3, verse 16, God said to the woman, "I will sharpen the pain of your pregnancy, and in pain you will give birth." So one consequence, because you turn your back on me, you're going to suffer. There's going to be pain involved in childbirth. I know it didn't really happen, but God said it was, so it must be true in there. I don't think that it's hurt. It doesn't hurt me at all. And then it says, "You will desire to control your husband, but he will rule over you." It says, now there's a broken relationship with you and your husband. You guys were perfect. Things were good. You were naked together and you felt no shame. And now there's going to be some other issues involved here because of your sin, because you have turned your back on me, because you thought, no, we can eat this fruit. I'm sure it's not going to hurt anybody. And that's what Satan said. The serpent said, did God really say that? That's not true. And because of that sin, now there's consequences. This perfect relationship you and your husband had, it's messed up. You're going to have pain in your childbirth. And then to the man, he said, "Since you listened to your wife and ate from the tree whose fruit I commanded you not to eat, the ground is cursed. So all of creation now is suffering because of you. All your life you will struggle to scratch a living from it. It will grow thorns and thistles for you, though you will eat of its grain." He says, look, the ground is going to be messed up. He goes on, "It's by the sweat of your brow you will have food to eat until you return." Well, we'll stop there. By the sweat of your brow you have food to eat. The situation is that things were good. And we assume by this that Adam and Eve did not have to work hard to eat. That things were good. There was no sickness. There was no death. And now, because of sin, there's collateral damage that is not just affecting their relationship with each other, but is affecting us as descendants of them, as sinners in this world that is not perfect. The world was broken at that point. Everything fell apart. Sickness entered. Death came in. Disease. Things aren't pretty. The ground was work. And then he goes on and he says, and this is the crazy thing for them, "You will work till you have food to eat, until you return to the ground from which you were made. For you were made from dust, and to dust you will return. God said, Adam, you're going to die. Your sin has cost you your life. And you thought, oh, it's not going to be that big of a deal. And our sin, Adam's sin, led to death for him, for us. I don't know what it was like. I don't know how long Adam and Eve were alive up until that point. But now things change. Game changer. Sin entered the world. They thought they could get away with it. Israel thought they could get away with it. Gomer thought that they could get away with it. And the issue is that sin leads to consequences. There's collateral damage. And our sin has collateral damage. It hurts our relationship with God, and it hurts our relationship with others. Our relationship with God is broken now. We cannot be with God on our own. We can't. There's no hope. On our own, there's nothing. If Adam and Eve hadn't sinned, and I don't even know what would have happened. Would someone else have sinned later? Would have been like Joe and Sylvia, or, you know, who knows, whatever. But the point was, if that never happened, somehow we would all be alive. But sin led to death. It damaged our relationship with God, and it broke it. I talked last week about how we look at sin and we're like, oh, it's this little oops, or oh, I just kind of, and this idea of missing the mark is what sin means. And I don't want us to think that missing the mark, and I thought of this illustration in the shower later in the week, that, you know, we have this idea like hitting the mark is good, but like if you're in a competition, right, and you hit the bullseye, awesome. But if you get the ring around it, that's not bad, right? But sin is not that kind of missing the mark. It's more like one of those classic rooftop chase scenes in a movie. You're running, the guy's coming behind you, and the first guy always makes it, right? He jumps. The first guy makes it, and he's fine. On the next roof, running, looking back. Ha, ha, ha. And the second guy, then he always goes, and he jumps. And if he makes it to the next roof, he's golden. But what if he just missed the mark a little bit? What if he was only an inch away from the next roof? I mean, an inch, right? That's pretty good. It's just a little white lie. It's just a small little miss. But if you miss the roof by an inch, you're still dead. You still splat on the ground like everything but an eggplant. And that's the idea of missing the mark. It's not like some archery competition. It's you're either there or you're off. You're either there or you're dead. And that's what's going on here, is that there's this broken and damaged relationship because of sin. And I want us to get that. Last week we looked about how sin is hurtful. It's like having an affair on God. It's not a little oopsie. It's not a minor white lie. It's a big deal. And I want you to get today just to totally like forget. Maybe you couldn't care less about God. But I want you to understand that there's still consequences that you are going to have to deal with because of your sin. You don't have to believe me or agree with me, but it's still going to go splat and make a mess. Because sin leads to damaged and broken relationships. Your sin has consequences. My sin has consequences. And we love to kid ourselves and say that it doesn't. And I wish I could say, you know what? If you wish really hard, then there won't be any consequences. Or if you feel really bad, then there won't be any consequences. But the reality is, it doesn't matter how we feel. If we sin, we have to deal with the damage. And it's affecting our relationships with God, and it's affecting our relationships with others. Always, always, always. So, I want to look at sin's splatter. I want to look at the mess that sin makes, right? Because I'm certain. I have never met Gomer, but I'm pretty certain that she didn't say, "Hey, I think I'll leave my husband tomorrow, and hopefully it goes out of control so much that I'll get to be a sex slave where I have nothing of my own and I'm just at the whim of my pimp." I'm pretty sure that wasn't her life goal. That probably wasn't her mission statement that she wrote down and typed up the day before. I'm pretty sure she thought, oh, it's not going to be that big of a deal. oh, this isn't going to hurt anybody. And I think that's the problem that we have. That's who we are. We get caught up and say, no, it's not that big of a deal. But I want you to know that sin splatters. It makes a mess everywhere. And so there's some things that we need to do. The first thing when it comes to sin is that we need to see it. If you walk away from here today saying, I don't know if I totally understand the relationship with Gomer and Hosea, I'm cool with that. If you walk away here saying, I don't. So how is Israel, but an Adam and Eve, and how are we, if Adam, how come we do sin because of him? You don't have to get that all the way either. But I do want you to walk away from here understanding that sin has consequences. If that's what you get, you need to see it. It's hurting you, and it's hurting others, and you're not immune. No matter how good you think you are, no matter how much your goods outweigh your bads, quote unquote, there are still consequences to your sin. So we need to see it. We need to recognize it. We need to say, yes, this is a problem. We don't have to be happy about it. We don't have to, and I'm not even asking you to change it. You want the really exciting news? You can't. We are destined to be stuck in our sin on our own. We have no hope. Gomer had no hope. There was nothing. She had nothing. She couldn't bargain, couldn't barter, didn't have anything to offer. The only thing she had was her body that was already owned by somebody else. Israel had nothing. They were scattered among Assyria. Nothing left. They had nothing to offer. And I need you to understand that there's nothing. We're stuck. On our own, we're stuck. We have no hope. And we need to recognize that. We need to recognize that sin is a problem, that sin is hurting you, and sin is hurting others. And you know, the issue is that sometimes it's now. Sometimes sin hurts you now, immediately. Sometimes, like, there's things that happen and it's clearly, oh, well, that's because I got involved in that sin. Sometimes you can't see it now, and that's the really scary thing, is that you think that this thing now isn't going to affect me later. What's a little lie? Well, a little lie becomes a little bigger lie, right, the next time. And then a little bigger lie. And eventually, you're in prison for cheating on your income taxes. Or what's a little look? I mean, porn is not going to hurt anybody. I mean, they did it. I'm not forcing it. And it might be something that steamrolls into something crazy, obsession. Or it might be something you can't even see, that why aren't my marriages working? Why aren't my relationships healthy? Maybe because you're trying to find love, acceptance, healthy sexuality in an image. So sometimes you can see it. The other thing too, right, is that there might be consequences later. And I've shared this quote before, but there was a guy, his name is Robert Fulghum, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He said, don't worry that your kids never listen to you. As a parent, don't worry your kids never listen to you. What you should worry about is that they're always watching you. And the Bible in the Old Testament talks about sins of the father to the next generations. And personally, I don't believe that that's some sort of like mystical like hex that's placed on them. But just the fact that sin, if you have a sin issue in your family, if you as the leader, as a parent, whatever, have a sin issue and you think it's not hurting anybody, your kids pick up on that. I guarantee that there are things that Sean Fitch, in his interaction with Cara, Alicia, Tommy, and Jack, comes directly from Gary Fitch's interaction with Sean, John, and Nick. And not that I'm blaming my dad and it's his fault or anything, but there were things that I picked up that I learned in terms of parenting. And some of them were great, and some of them weren't. And so there, we need to understand that your sin has consequences. It is affecting you. It is damaging your relationships, and it's damaging other people's relationships. We need to see that. Please don't be deceived. please don't miss it. Please don't be there with Adam and Eve at the tree with the fruit going, yeah, did God really say that? That's not really true. It looks pretty good. We know better. And I just want you to get that you need to recognize that your sin is hurting you and it's hurting others. And you might not see it. You might not feel the effects of it. You might think, I'm the only one that knows. The Bible says, be sure your sin will find you out. And it might be something catastrophic where you end up getting imprisoned or you get fired from your job or something like that. And it might be something little that is just affecting you and tainting your relationships with other people. Either way, it's affecting. There's consequences. There's things you're dealing with. So I just say that to you guys. Please see it. Recognize that sin has consequences. And as much as we want to think it's not that big of a deal, it is. The second thing is I'd like us to own it. Own it. Your sin is your fault. You control you. And we talked about this a little bit last week. You're not bound in your sin. If you're a follower of Jesus, if you've given your heart to him, you are not bound in your sin. You've been set free. You don't have to sin. But I think it's killer that we say, yes, sin is bad. But then we go and say, well, it's not my fault. It's their fault. We blame it on someone else. And the crazy thing is, when we see the consequences, we blame it on God. And I got to tell you this, as a pastor, or I said it normally there, but, you know, people come and they talk with me. They share their heart with me. And I appreciate that. And I honestly am very humbled. I feel like I've got nothing to offer. But one of the things that I hear, not often, but I hear sometimes, is how could things be this way? And to me, I'm like, why would God do this to me? And I say, well, it's because of your sin. Like, don't you see that? Why do I have such a hard time in my relationships? It's because you don't have any standards in your relationships. Like, there's just so much of that where we like to blame God and say it's his fault. And I just want to tell you, it's not his fault. It's our fault. We're the ones that have made those choices. We're the ones that are getting caught up in the consequences of our sin. And just own it. We need to, because if we're blaming other people and trying to find them at fault for our sin, we're going to fail. We're up there pushing watermelons off of the roof, seeing it splatter and say, well, why would God let that happen? Because you threw the watermelon off of the roof. And that's what happens when you throw watermelon off of a roof. That's God's fault. If God really loved me, that watermelon wouldn't have splattered. We blame God. And I'll say this, that there's kind of like, as I'm thinking about this issue of sin and consequences, there's almost like two kinds of consequences. Now, I will say this, there's a lot of things a lot of bad things that happen in our lives. And some of them are a consequence directly of our sin. Some of them are just a result of the curse on the earth. I mean, this whole thing, we talked about this in our Wounded series last February. So if you want to listen to that first week of Wounded, we talked about why do bad things happen to good people and that whole argument. But it's specifically related to the consequences of sin. There's kind of two things. First of all, there's what I've called passive consequences. And these are consequences that are because of the curse. These are things that just happen. Because they happen, because they're a response of the curse, because of our fallen nature, because of the problems with the earth. And this is, you know, if you touch a stove that is on, what happens? You get burned. There wasn't like somebody actively burning you. It wasn't you choosing to be burned. It happened. It's a result. You disobey your parents, you play in traffic, you get hit by a car. It's just a passive consequence of sin. You sleep around, you get an STD. It happens. Why did this happen? Oh, I know why it happened. Because you're sleeping around. God said, I want it this way. And you're like, yeah, this is fine. Splatter mess everywhere. Drive drunk. Get in a car accident. Like, these are like, you do this, this is going to happen. You drop it, it's going to splatter. But then there's what I kind of see as what I'm calling active consequences. And this is, I think, the story of Israel and God. and to some extent the story of Gomer and Hosea, but where God will specifically cause a consequence because he wants you back. He wants you to hit rock bottom. Now, this isn't always the case, so please don't misunderstand me. And don't say, well, what? I mean, we talked about Job, you know, and the issue with Job and his friends. And this is during the You Don't Know Jack series. You know, you have no idea what's going on in their life. And how Job's friends were like, oh, it's because of your sin, Job. It's because of your sin. Had nothing to do with the sin. But there are times, and we just, these are the questions. We have to have like a checklist. These are the questions we need to ask. Okay, why is this happening to me? What is God doing? Because sometimes God wants us to hit rock bottom so that we turn to him. Because he wants us back. Because he loves us. Because he misses us. Because sometimes he will punish us. He will discipline us so that we will return to him. That is what a good parent does. A good parent disciplines their child so that they will return to the right path. It's not because, and if it is, you're not disciplining, it's called abuse. It's not because you're enjoying hitting your kids or you're enjoying punishing your kids. If that's what you're, if you get your pleasure out of that, you've got some issues. But discipline truly is an issue where you say, I am doing this, I am withholding that treat, whatever, because I want you to go back the right way. And sometimes that's the consequence of our sin, is that God is saying, I am hitting you with this stuff because I want you to come back. Don't you see that there's a mess everywhere and we keep throwing stuff off? What's going on? Why is there this mess? Because you're still getting involved in sin. So it's time that we own it. And here's the most encouraging part of our sin, of the mess that sin makes. And that's that we should fear it. We should be afraid of sin. Because your sin, my sin, as we said before, have separated us from God. Because of your sin, you're going to hell. That is a scary thing. You think you understand. We go through rough times, rough weeks, rough months, rough seasons in life. We're like, yeah, I'm going through hell. Oh, no, you're not. Hell is a real, awful, torrential torment place where death sounds better. And hell is a separation. It is separation from God. Because of sin, we cannot be in God's presence. As much as he loves us, we would die in his presence. And that's the whole concept. God is perfect. We are not. Our sin has separated us. We should be afraid of our sin. We should be afraid of the fact that it has separated us from God, that is going to kill us. You are going to die physically because of your sin. And on your own, you are going to die spiritually because of your sin. You're going to be stuck in hell forever. Here's what Romans says to kind of tie the Adam and Eve story to us. Romans chapter 5, Paul writes to the church in Rome. He says, sin entered the world because one man sinned. That one man was Adam. And death came because of sin. Everyone sinned. And so death came to all people. We're all running, and we can't clear to the next building. We fall short every time. All sinned. All of us have sinned, and we're short of God's perfection, of God's standard. So we should fear it. You and I should like get a healthy understanding of how awful our sin is. Not only is it offensive and like having an affair to God, but the consequences are eternal and horrible and wretched, and we should be afraid. We should be very afraid. Our sin leads to damaged and broken relationships. Broken relationship with others, and most importantly, a broken relationship with God. And on that wonderfully depressing note, that's where the story ends today. Gomer is trapped as a sex slave. She's got nothing on her own. Her relationships have been damaged, destroyed. She is at the bottom. And we are like Gomer. In our sin, we've got nothing to offer. We've got nothing to do. We're at the bottom, destined for hell on our own. And if this is your first time here, or you've been here for a few months, you're like, wow, it's pretty intense, Sean. Good. Let me say this. Don't miss next week, because the story isn't over. This chapter finishes.
with Gomer stuck in slavery. This chapter finishes with us dead in our sin, with Israel being scattered among Assyria. But the story is not done, because everything changes next week. So I encourage you, please, and I know we talk about all the opportunities we have as a church for you to listen to the point. Please, if you hear this, if you're listening online right now, if you hear this, you need to listen to next week. And if you're going, that was the most depressing thing ever, I don't know if I'm even happy anymore, give me a week. That's all I ask. And maybe that sadness, that remorse, that punch in the gut that we've gotten from sin is a good thing. Maybe it'll help us to realize how desperately we need somebody to rescue us. Let's pray. God, I thank you so much for your word. And I, as hard as this is to teach, as hard as this is to talk about, as hard as this is to experience, just the catastrophe, the calamity of our sin, and the fact that we think it's fun at the time, and all of a sudden there's a mess everywhere. I pray that you would let that haunt us and just help us to, it sounds weird, but help us to kind of wallow in that, God. That on our own we've got nothing. That on our own we're no different than Gomer, trapped as a sex slave, owning nothing, having nothing to offer, having nothing on her own. And I pray that you would help us to see that and remember, even still, that there's nothing we can do to make you love us more, and there's nothing that we can do to make you love us less. As we finish the story next week, God, let us see just the beauty, the wonderful picture that we're going to conclude with next time. But God, help us to have a true understanding, a healthy, perhaps even a hurtful understanding of sin, and the fact that there are consequences, and it's damaging our relationships with you, and it's damaging our relationships with others. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.